If only I had someone to show it off to. I sit on the edge of my bed, my hands behind me, supporting my weight. When he appears, I jump to my feet before I can stop myself, my heart racing. Even though I've seen him walk through walls before, it doesn't exactly prepare me. I have a feeling it's not something I could ever get used to. I'm proud of myself for not shrieking, at least. I catch sight of the king's face once he steps farther into the room and realize he's glaring at me. His fists are clenched tightly at his sides. Despite the late hour, he's clothed from neck to toe in his day attire. I thought you were done peering in on ladies while they were dressing, I say. His jaw shakes slightly as he says, You're clothed. But I might not have been. If you had knocked first, what the hell have you done? I cross my arms. I refuse to cower, king or no. What's the matter with you? I've done nothing. Unable to bear shouting at me from so far away, he comes forward until we're mere feet apart. The whole castle is buzzing with it. Did you or did you not tell the ladies in my mother's sitting room that we've touched? Cold fingers walk down my spine. I'm unsure whether it's better to lie or not. Servants gossip. They exaggerate. What did you say? I step away from the bed. I'm trying to sell our courtship. I embellished our interactions. I said we take midnight strolls together and that you're more intimate when we're alone. Why is he so worried? It's not as if he has a reputation to protect. He's the king. Royalty may do as they please. Did you say that we've touched? What were your exact words? He demands. I rack my brain, trying to find the wording. I said you kissed my gloved hands in private. Gloved? You're sure you said gloved? I'm certain. Why? He runs a hand through his hair, and the immaculate style falls away, the strands drooping to his ears. You cannot tell people that you've broken the law. You cannot. You have no right to be angry with me, I snap, quite finished with being reprimanded. You tasked me with selling our courtship. That was the deal. If there were things I wasn't allowed to do, you should have said so. Now tell me why people cannot think that we've touched. And don't you dare try to tell me it's for my safety. You could pardon anyone for anything. You're king. So what do such rumors mean for you? The anger falls from his face, and I think he realizes for the first time that I'm in a nightgown. His eyes trail down the length of me. Slowly. Just as he did when we were first introduced at the ball. They make me weak. He turns on his heel and disappears through the solid wall of my room. Chapter 9. I demand my maid look for something red in my wardrobe the next morning. I know exactly the garment she will find. A floor-length dress that requires a petticoat to give it some volume. From my waist to the floor, the silk is gathered in bunches, giving it a tastefully wrinkled look. The bodice turns black at the torso and hugs my waist, coming to a little point over each breast, giving me full coverage. The dress is sleeveless, but I wear gloves that climb nearly to my shoulders. I didn't want to detract from my new necklace by wearing a dress with sleeves. My maid does the clasp at the back, and the red rose pendant falls over my collarbone, matching everything beautifully. I am not wearing the dress for the king. Not after last night. No, I'm forced to wear his trinket because all the ladies in the sitting room saw me receive it. How would it look if I were not to wear it? As soon as I'm done, a tray is brought in and placed on the table. A breakfast of fresh fruits, porridge with sugar, and freshly squeezed juice. Next to the first tray, a servant brings in a second, setting it on the other side of my little table. What is this? I ask. Then Callias walks in, and the servants leave us alone in the parlor. I should have known, I grumble as I take my seat, wondering if I should be prepared for more chastising from him. I thought I would join you today, he says, holding out my chair for me. I should visit your chambers to sell our act. We will, of course, avoid the bedchamber, so as not to ruin your reputation. I take a sip of my juice before saying, You were in my bedchamber last night. Is that room only to be reserved for when you feel like yelling? He looks down, ashamed.
I was hasty to make assumptions. I should have known the ladies would exaggerate their gossip.
He looks up from his food, taking a proper look at me, at my neck.
Do you like my present?
I liked it better before you yelled at me.
His eyes darken, and he stops the hand that was on its way to run through his hair.
He holds absolutely still for a moment, as though thinking through something carefully.
Ah, he says at last, I have not yet apologized.
No, you haven't.
I'm sorry for behaving like an ass last night. Could you ever forgive me, Alessandra, my friend, if I promise never to do it again?
Do what, precisely? I ask.
Jump to conclusions without coming to you first in earnest, not in anger.
I take my time, making a good show of thinking it over. But of course I forgive him. He has by far given me the sincerest apology I've ever received.
You could yell at me in turn, if it would make you feel better, he offers.
I'm not in a mood for yelling.
Then save it for when you are in the right mood. It's only fair.
I crack a smile. I forgive you. The tension in his shoulders relaxes, and he focuses on the meal before him. Without looking up, he says,
The necklace is lovely on you.
He's really fishing for my gratitude.
Is he worried I do not like it?
It's the most exquisite gift I've ever received, I say truthfully. A small smile reaches the corners of his lips.
No doubt you've received many gifts from men.
No doubt, I answer playfully.
As Lord Eliadis tried to woo you with gifts.
So you've noticed his attentions toward me?
I think everyone in the castle can tell he's smitten with you.
I smile. Not yet, he hasn't.
Good. As an afterthought, he adds, Because it wouldn't do for people to think you're being courted by someone other than me. It would ruin our plans.
Of course. But could that have been just a smidgen of jealousy in his tone? I enter my rooms for the evening, having spent a lovely afternoon with the ladies in the sitting room. I didn't see Callias save for breakfast. More and more, it's becoming important for me to find a way into the meeting rooms. Not only do I wish to get a head start on running the kingdom, but if those rooms are where Callias spends the majority of his time, then I need to be there. How else am I to get him to fall in love with me if we're not spending more time together? I send my maid away as soon as I'm dressed in a simple nightgown and approach the bed.
Alessandra. I gasp so loudly, I nearly choke on the air. My hand goes flying to my heart.
What the devil's Myron? He emerges from my wardrobe of all places, dressed in pristine brocade, not a wrinkle in sight despite the cramped quarters he was in. Why the hell are you coming out of my wardrobe? I demand.
The only way I could sneak in here was to wait until a servant was distracted in cleaning. Then I waited for you.
I thought I made it perfectly clear that we would not be speaking anymore. How dare you ignore my wishes? That won't go without consequences. Myron grins like he's just won his father's inheritance before folding himself into a cushioned chair near my bed.
That's the problem, Alessandra. You no longer have anything to hold over me.
My face remains a mask of indifference, but my skin prickles with fear. What are you talking about?
Haven't you heard the news yet?
My father expired this morning. My brother has inherited his viscounty. We're quite close, Proteus and I. I assure you he won't care one whit that I lost that thrice-damned pendant in a game of cards. Proteus also has a love of gaming.
My blood turns cold in my veins. My leverage is gone.
Proteus must be much better at gaming than you, considering he hasn't gambled away every penny he owns.
Myron's jaw clenches, and he stands abruptly.
No, see, you don't get to talk to me like that anymore, Alessandra. Not unless you want the whole palace to know just how much of a strumpet you really are. My vision goes blurry, and sheer anger buzzes through me. My dagger is in my boot. I contemplate using it for all of a second. but Hector's death is being looked into. I can't have another death on my hands, and I'd never get the body out of the palace unseen. No, this situation has to be dealt with very carefully. Perhaps I could lure Myron away from the palace before killing him. Nothing to say, Myron asks, or does your mind need more time to process this? Perhaps I can assist by making your situation perfectly clear. He leans forward. I own you. You will do whatever I say whenever I say it. And you're going to start by getting me into that play at the Viscount's estate tomorrow night. The play? I ask. Why should you wish to go? Because it's time I made some more powerful friends. I owe a lot of money to a lot of people. My brother can do only so much for me. But you, the woman courting the king, you're going to get me into the most prestigious estates in the kingdom. And when the world sees you, the king's chosen, hanging off my arm, they'll know I'm someone to pay attention to. No, 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 no! I let out a breath of air as calmly as I can manage before sitting on the edge of my bed, placing a defeated look upon my face. I was wrong to treat you as I did, Myron. I'm so sorry, but we don't need to be enemies. We can help each other. I'm happy to get you into the play. Save the act, Myron says unmoved. I've known you too long to know when you're faking. I guarantee you never could tell when I was faking. Myron's cheeks go red, and his neck looks like it might pop a vein. He strides over to me and raises a hand as though he might hit me. He pauses, then drops it. I'm not one for violence. I don't need to strike you. Like I said, I own you. Now get me into that play, or I'll tell the king all about how you like to spend your nights. This could not be happening. I've always sat at the king's side, all the nobility watching my every move, as though they could learn the secrets to life's greatest mysteries if they only stared at me long enough. And today? Today, Myron sits on my left, not the king. Orin, Lord Eliades, having seen an opportunity, quickly took the seat to my right. Rhoda and Hestia shoot me questioning gazes from across the table, but I can't manage to do much more than glare at my soup. We missed you dearly at the charity ball, Orin says. I donated 2,000 nekos to the homeless shelter in Naxos. Such a small amount compared to the vastness of my yearly income, but I intend to give much more throughout the year. Myron leans over. Smile, darling. Everyone is watching. Come now, or I shall have to strike up a conversation that isn't appropriate for the luncheon table at all. My lips turn up, but it's more of a grimace than anything else. I honestly can't say which devil is worse, the one on my right or the one on my left. I didn't sleep a wink last night. Instead, I've been plotting how to get out of my situation with Myron. So far, I don't have any ideas, save outright murder. But I need to be patient, and somehow make sure Myron doesn't jeopardize my standing with the king. Leandros, Petros, and Reuben sit together on the other side of Rhoda, chatting among themselves. Oh, I would give anything to be on that side of the table. Melita Xenicus, Reuben's betrothed, keeps a firm grasp on his arm as though if she doesn't, he'll escape from her. Reuben attempts to eat his food with his other hand, while blatantly ignoring her. Melita, however, keeps looking over at this side of the table in between each bite of food. At Orin, I realize. Is that admiration in her eyes? How interesting. What do you think of Lord Eliade's charitable acts, Lady Xenicus? I ask, speaking over the top of Orin's next dull remark. Melita jolts as though coming out of a trance. I beg your pardon? Were you not admiring the Earl's generosity? Or was it something else? Red flames her cheeks. She turns away from me and leans into Reuben. I glance back and forth between Reuben and Orin. Orin is certainly more handsome, which would probably entice a vain woman such as Melita. I've had several more conversations with Leandros and his friends since the first lunch meeting. I know Reuben is the firstborn of a Viscount, a very rich Viscount. He will inherit one day. But Orin is an earl, already in possession of his land and title. An idea begins to form, one that just might rid me of both Orin and Myron.
His Majesty the King! A herald booms, and everyone is suddenly on their feet.
Hestia stands so quickly that her spoon flicks droplets of stew onto Orin's tunic. My mood improves ever so slightly. Callias strides into the room, takes one look at the empty seats at the head of the table, and says, Lady Stathos? Yes, I ask, ever relieved that he's here. Come join me, won't you? I don't wait for a servant to help me out of my chair. I fairly leap from it. Callias watches me as I sweep past Myron, a look of sheer gratitude upon my face. Who is that man? I don't know him, Callias says as I sit. He's nobody, I say in all honesty. Now I'm more curious. The Great Hall is back to chattering in full force, so I dare to raise my voice a little. His name is Myron Caligaris. He's the son of a Viscount. And how are you two acquainted? His father had business with my father. We met on a few occasions when he would come over to the Maesis estate. Callias has his attention on his food, but I can't help but feel as though the indifference is forced. Your friends, then? Not anymore. I make the mistake of looking down the table at Myron, who winks at me. He seems awfully friendly. That tone. Oh, how I wish I could read it. You could group him with Eliades. Ah, an admirer who is hesitant to give up. I can hardly fault them for that. I place my hands on my lap as a servant retrieves my plate from my previous seat and lays it before me. Did another meeting keep you? I ask carefully. Has the bandit struck again? Callias's shadows darken. Not since the last time, no. But we've had word of another problem. I nod, focusing my attention on my food. I don't want to ask. I want him to tell me on his own. I want him to confide in me. To trust me. My patience is rewarded. We've had delegates arrive from Pegai, the most recent kingdom Callias has conquered. The news they bring isn't good. There are open acts of rebellion happening right and left. The people kill my soldiers, start fires in the barracks, throw rotten food upon my regent when she travels the streets. They oppose your rule? A muscle ticks in his jaw. They were beaten. I conquered them fair and square. Their taxes are hardly more than what they were before, and my soldiers provide protection for the whole city. The only lawlessness to be found is within the insurgent peasants. So what's to be done? Public hangings? So far, it's only been public floggings. The smaller the population, the fewer taxes I receive. I plan to move on to conquering Estetia by next year. The army needs the money. He looks up from his food suddenly. This cannot be interesting to you. We don't need to discuss it.
I find it fascinating, I answer. But if I may ask, doesn't flogging a man make it difficult for him to work? How will you obtain your taxes then?
Do you have a better idea?
Oftentimes, it is not fear of punishment that prevents wrongdoing. As I know too well from my history of disobeying my father, sometimes working to gain something is better. What do the Pegaeans want aside from their independence?
He turns to me. I don't know.
Perhaps a good place to start would be to give them a voice, allow them to select someone of their own choosing to be on the Regent's Council, if the attacks cease.
You would give them more power, he asks incredulously.
Of course not. I would give them the illusion of power. Once you know who they've chosen and who that person interacts with the most, you'll have found the ringleaders, and you can put an end to all of them. Crush the entire rebellion underfoot.
He swallows the bite in his mouth. Alessandra Stathos. That's positively despicable.
He says the words like they're the highest compliment he can give me.
You are an absolute gem. Do you know that?
My whole body warms at the praise. That evening, I make inquiries. First to the Viscount, Myron's brother, Proteus. Then to the owner of the popular gaming hall I know Myron frequents. These are the first steps to putting my plan into action. This is not over. Not by a long shot. Chapter 10. The dress I've selected for tonight is perhaps my most exquisite. For my first outing away from the palace, I want to draw attention. I want everyone to know I'm the one courting the king over 6 kingdoms, even if he's not in attendance with me. The gown is silver, the skirt showcasing loose ribbons made to look like waterfalls spilling down the sides. Tiny gems, sapphires, and emeralds are shaped to look like fish jumping from the bundled fabric all along the hemline. My only accessory is a gray fan, perfect for hiding my features should the play turn out to be dull. And of course, to hide my distaste over Myron. He has his curls pulled back out of his eyes and secured at the back of his head with a band. His jacket is ebony-colored with gold stitching along the hems, across his shoulders and down the front. Tight-fitted black dress pants with gold buttons adorn his long legs.
Your arm, Alessandra, Myron says as we exit the carriage.
I refrain from clenching my teeth as I place my arm in his. Rhoda and Hestia accompany us, and though I've introduced Myron to both of them as a childhood friend, they keep shooting questioning looks over at him.
I can't believe you wouldn't tell me what color you were wearing tonight, Hestia moans from beside me. I should have guessed, Silver.
Your pink gown is lovely, I tell her. You look like a spring fairy.
I need to be wearing what the future queen is wearing.
I'm too flattered by the assumption to say anything right away.
At some point, Rhoda offers, you really must become your own woman, Hestia. Find your own style and own it.
Hestia ignores her.
I believe that's enough chatter, ladies, Myron says. Come along.
We can talk as we walk, I bite out. He is not allowed to treat my friends this way. Still, Hestia and Rhoda say nothing as we climb up the drive. The Viscount and Viscountess of Christakos have a lovely estate. Neatly trimmed hedges line the drive. Steps made of marble lead to the front door, and the Viscount and his wife are dressed in only the finest silks and satins. The lady of the estate takes my hand in hers when it is our turn to be greeted.
Lady Stathos, what an honor it is to greet you in my home. But where is his majesty?
She stares at Myron, as though by squinting she might be able to transform him into Callias. Detained by work, I'm afraid.
A pity. Do make yourself comfortable, and I hope you will tell him how you enjoyed our hospitality.
Myron tightens his grip on my arm.
Instead, I'm accompanied by my friend Myron Caligaris, I say awkwardly, second son of the late Viscount.
Oh, how do you do?
The Viscountess asks politely.
Quite well, considering, my lady. I hope you won't be too wroth with Alessandra for allowing me to escort her in the king's absence. She thought the distraction might do me some good.
The Viscountess smiles, but she looks pointedly at the guests behind us, very clearly suggesting that we've taken too much of her time.
Lady Christakos has many more guests to greet. We should be on our way to enjoy the festivities, I say.
Then I start walking, pulling Myron along with me before he can say anything else stupid. The ballroom has been cleared of everything save cushioned chairs, which are fashioned in a circle around the middle of the floor, which I assume is reserved for the stage. Our seats are in the front row because they were selected for royalty.
Oh, look, it's the Duke of Demetrio. His daughter is coming out into society early next week. Alessandra, you must introduce me.
I know about the ball held in the Duke's daughter's honor. I've already accepted an invitation to the event,
but I can hardly go over there right now and let Myron make a fool of me yet again. The play will start soon, I argue. There's no time. Myron answers me with a look that very clearly states what will happen if I don't do as he bids. But I try again. There's one seat open beside him. You could snag it before anyone else does. Then you'd have the whole play to talk with him. Myron thinks it over for only a second before leaving us. Thank the devils. And I really hope he doesn't do too much damage on his own. We finally take our seats. Rhoda sits in the middle between me and Hestia, the chair to my left unoccupied. Remind me why we brought him with us? Rhoda asks. I had no choice. My father demanded I introduce him to some new people, I lie. Quick thinking on getting rid of him, though, Hestia says. Thank you. I wish I'd never been friends with him. I hurriedly interject the word I'd almost left out. He's only using me due to my favor with the king. I glance to the girls to my right. Is that the only reason we're friends? Hestia looks affronted. Of course not. It was your dress that made me want to be your friend. And now that I know you, I couldn't care less about what you wear. Well, for the most part, she amends. I admired your ability to snag a man so quickly, Rhoda adds. It has nothing to do with the king specifically. Aren't we all drawn to our friends in the beginning by trifling things? True bonds develop afterward, when character is revealed. Satisfied with their answers, I look out toward the empty stage. A gentleman with tan locks eyes the empty spot beside me and gives me a grin. Leandros. Alessandra, he says after walking over. I'm so delighted to see you've joined us outside the stuffy palace for a night. However, did you manage to separate yourself from the king long enough? You wouldn't be giving me false hopes now, would you? Oh, he's such a flirt. I love it. It's all in your head, I'm afraid, Lord Vasco, I say. He throws his hands over his heart dramatically. You wound me with your formal address. Where are your cohorts this evening? I ask, looking behind him for signs of Reuben and Petros. I'm surprised you can't sense Reuben's distaste from here. You'll find him to the right, third row from the front. The brightness of his attire stands out like a beacon. I would have seen him if I had but looked. His clothing shimmers with golds and reds. On any other man, it would look ridiculous, but he pulls it off with confidence. To his right, I can see the very reason for his distaste. Melita Xenakis. She has his arm in a death grip, looking quite pleased with herself, as though Reuben were a fish she'd just caught. As if sensing my stare, she looks in my direction. When she sees the empty seat beside me, where the king should be sitting, or perhaps she's thinking of Orin, she grins to herself and looks away. What a little bit. And Petros is off giggling in the corner with Lord Osias. Isn't that the man who was flirting with his beau at the ball? Yes, well, Petros has decided that two can play at that game. How very conniving of him, I say with a smile. Oh, no, Hestia suddenly says. A footman is bringing Lady Zervas this way. Leandros, sit down. Leandros attempts to eye me for permission, but Hestia rises and shoves him into the empty seat beside me before regaining her own. The footman doesn't miss a beat, slightly altering his course to deliver Lady Zervas to a new location. Why don't we want her sitting with us? I ask, leaning into Rhoda. Hestia does the same, bending over Rhoda's lap so I can hear her whisper. She's a terrible bore, so melancholy all the time. We wouldn't have any fun with her around. I don't recognize her from the queen's sitting room, I say. That's because she doesn't join the other ladies, Rhoda says. She keeps to herself most of the time. I wonder why she sticks around the palace at all if she doesn't enjoy the company. She has to, Rhoda explains. Her presence was ordered at the palace, just like the rest of us. Ah, she was there the night the king died. Now the palace is her prison until the culprit is found. I watch Lady Zervas take her seat. As soon as she does, she looks right at me.
her expression practically lethal. Leandros chuckles from next to me. Why is she looking at me like that? I ask. All ladies will look at you like that when you're sitting next to me. It's the jealousy. I give him a doubtful look. He grins. All right, it might not be because of me, but it is the jealousy. Because I'm courting the king? He's less than half her age. No, not Callias. It was the late king whom Lady Zervas fancied. They had a brief courtship before the king's heart was stolen by the late queen. Zervas never got over him. She sees you in a position where she once was, and she envies you for that, I imagine. Now I look at the lady in a new light. Her voluminous hair is streaked with gray, but it doesn't make her look old so much as dignified. She carries herself with an air of importance, but doesn't deign to look at anyone around her now that she's done with me. Yes, she carries herself as if she fancies herself a queen. Tonight, she's my favorite person, Leandros continues. I don't know how else I could have persuaded you to let me sit beside you. I roll my eyes at him, just as some of the lights in the room turn off, dimming the makeshift stage. The actors take their places, racing up the gaps between the rows of chairs to reach the center, and the performance begins. The play is so dreadfully dull. By the end, the two lovers still weren't able to reconcile their differences in order to be together. The entire performance was one long argument, really. There was no swordplay, no fisticuffs, nothing exciting at all. The next outing I've agreed to attend is a debutante ball for the 16-year-old daughter of the Duke and Duchess of Demetrio, far-removed cousins to the king, but relations nonetheless. I send another note to Callias, inviting him to join me, hoping this time it might be different considering he has a connection to the family, but his response is the same. My dear friend Alessandra, I do wish I could accompany you. I rather enjoyed the last time we danced. Alas, I am hard at work putting your plan for Pegai into action. With any luck, we'll have the rebels put down before the month is out. The council and I are also dealing with the latest attack by the masked bandit, this time far too close to the palace for my liking. We at least have a more accurate description of the man. Brown hood, brown mask over his eyes. That was, of course, sarcasm. I'm afraid I will also have to skip dinner this evening. The council will be taking it in the meeting room tonight. I sincerely hope you are enjoying your time among the nobility. I hear your friend Caligaris accompanied you to the play at the Viscount's. I'm glad to see you were able to find a replacement for me. Yours, Callias. A replacement? Is that bitterness I detect in the strokes of his hand? Or perhaps a subtle warning? I need to get rid of Myron, and fast. In order to do that, I need to talk to Reuben. Yet I also need to speak to Callias in an attempt to strengthen our courtship. I weigh the two options, trying to decide which to do first. It's been far too long since I've seen the king. I must locate him. I grow no closer to achieving my goals when days go by without the two of us seeing each other. How is the king supposed to fall in love with me then? No servant is above bribery, and I use any I can find throughout the palace to direct me to the meeting rooms used by the king and council. My ultimate task is difficult. I have to have the appearance of courting the king, but I also have to appear to Callias as though I only want to be friends, all while actually trying to get him to fall in love with me. It's such a fine line to walk. I make it as far as a deserted hallway, unsure of where to go next, when a figure rounds a corner. Leandros! Alessandra! Are you seeking me out now? Was it our time together at the play? Have you finally seen reason and broken things off with Callias? I mask the grin that wants to surface. I'm actually looking for Callias. Leandros looks around himself questioningly. Around my quarters? I groan. Is that where I am? I'm looking for the meeting rooms. A servant directed me this way. These are the guest quarters. I assure you the king isn't anywhere on this floor.
And I paid that last man a necos for directions. Clearly I've been led astray.
Or you took a wrong turn.
You dare suggest the blame lies with me?
A twinkle appears in his eye. You're being courted by a king.
I wouldn't be surprised if your mind was elsewhere while you traveled the castle.
I narrow my eyes. I'm not the sort of lady to swoon at a title.
What sort of lady are you?
He asks, his voice taking on a playful tone.
The kind who likes attention from her would-be intended?
I hadn't meant to say it aloud, but the bitter thought surfaced nonetheless.
Leandros nods, as though that makes perfect sense to him.
May I escort you to the meeting rooms? I have nothing better to do than spend time with a beautiful woman.
I nod gratefully. Please do. At this rate, the king will have already left by the time a competent servant directs me the right way.
We're still blaming the servants, are we?
I'm of half a mind to smack him. Leandros laughs at the look on my face.
Forgive me. This way.
He offers me his arm and I take it. After a few moments, I say, I can't believe I'm reduced to this, looking for him during his meetings. Leandros will only think I'm put out that the man who is courting me doesn't have time for me.
A king is very busy, he says. I'm sure if he could spend more time with you, he would.
Is that what you told yourself when he pushed you away? I ask.
The muscles in the arm I'm clinging to tighten.
Perhaps that was too harsh.
No, he says at last. I knew Callias needed to heal after the death of his parents. He'd just finished grieving over his brother, only to have his parents taken from him. I gave him time, because I thought eventually he would lean on me and his other friends for support. But he hasn't recovered.
Callias had a brother? I ask.
You don't remember the death of the crown prince?
I shake my head.
You would have been young when it happened. Xanthos Maharis was Callias's older brother of 2 years. I'm told the king looked up to his brother, but I didn't know him then.
What happened to Xanthos?
A carriage accident, they say.
How terrible.
Leandros nods. My uncle brought me to the palace a few years later, thinking the companionship of boys his age might help. I wasn't prepared to actually like him. It being a planned friendship, you see.
I know the sentiment precisely.
And now, with his parents gone, Leandros continues, Callias trusts no one. Save you, it would seem.
A pause. How is he?
I pat Leandros's arm. He seems well enough. He's so dreadfully busy taking everything on his shoulders, but we have good conversations. I just worry he's forgotten entirely how to have fun.
Fun? Yes, that's exactly what Callias needs. Someone to remind him what fun is.
Here we are, Leandros says when we turn onto a new corridor. Straight ahead. You can't miss it.
Thank you for your help. I never would have found it on my own.
You're most welcome.
Leandros takes back his arm, and his eyes rest on the necklace at my throat. The ruby-studded rose.
Beautiful.
It was a gift from Callias.
The poets say a virtuous woman's worth is above rubies. I should think the king values you more than all the precious gems in the world combined. I know I would if you were mine.
And he takes his leave, disappearing out of sight. I'm left staring after him, a peculiar mix of emotions swirling within me.
The poets can say whatever they damned like. A woman's worth is not decided by what's between her legs, but by what is in her mind.
But Leandros's flirtations are beyond flattering. Perhaps he might be someone to use in the future, should I need to make Callias jealous.
Or if the two used to be best friends, Leandros would know more than I do about Callias's interests and hobbies. He could prove to be a valuable source of information, if I could broach the topic naturally.
When I reach the end of the corridor, I'm stopped by a man with overly large spectacles, heeled shoes, tights, and a black tunic. He holds a pen and parchment in his hands.
My lady, can I help you? He asks.
He tries to be subtle about the look-over he gives me, but I see it clearly. My name is Lady Alessandra Stathos. I was hoping to catch His Majesty in between meetings. The man drops into a bow.
I have heard of your arrival at court, Lady Stathos. I'm sure the king would love to know you stopped by, but I'm afraid he's in back-to-back meetings for the rest of the day.
Do they switch rooms? Perhaps I can catch him and pass. The doors open, and a group of men and women step through. The appointment keeper grabs my arm to pull me out of the way so as not to be run over.
Forgive me, my lady, he says once the angry horde has passed.
He disappears into the room, and I promptly follow him before the door can close. The room is less a meeting room than an assembly hall. Benches span over half of the space. Against the opposite wall rests a throne and a scattering of smaller chairs. While Callias occupies the throne, the council members take up the surrounding seats. This is a room where decisions are made, where power is wielded. Once Callias is dead, I will be at the head of this room, deciding the fates of others. Callias spots me almost at once. He rises and brushes past the appointment keeper to reach me.
What are you doing here?
He asks quietly. Putting on a show, I answer. I miss my intended. I thought to steal you away. We could go for a horse ride up the mountainside.
That sounds lovely. But we have more appointments scheduled, I'm afraid. I can't even take a stroll about the room with you.
Oh, I say, put out. Well, what was that all about? I gesture toward the angry nobles who left in a huff. Callias rubs at his temple.
Even more of the nobility who have been relieved of their valuables by our masked bandit.
Have you put a heavier patrol on the roads?
That and more. We've done everything we can think of. Lady Tazula has personally questioned the merchants living in the areas where these thefts have taken place. None of the people will speak against the bandit. He's their hero. They won't turn on him. I suspect, however, that none of them knows his real identity anyway. Ampelios has questioned many of the peasants, but we haven't caught any who have accepted the bandit's charity. Without the merchants cooperating by telling us which peasants suddenly have more coin to spare, we have no way of knowing who is receiving the stolen coins. We've tried staging attacks to catch him to no avail. We've issued a reward for his capture, but not a soul is tempted by it. This man is making me look a fool when I get my hands on him.
Callias cuts off suddenly, remembering who he's talking to.
I'm sorry. I'm letting my temper get the best of me. You shouldn't be here to deal with this.
The council members are silent, eavesdropping on our conversation without bothering to pretend otherwise. Lord Vasco looks between Callias and me, waiting to see how I'll respond.
Your Majesty, I have an idea for dealing with the bandit, if you'd care to hear it. Since you were so appreciative of my advice in dealing with the rebels in Pegai, I hope you will trust me enough to let me speak on this matter as well. The flowery words are for the council's benefit, of course.
Callias blinks slowly.
Please continue.
If attempts to trap the bandit have proved unsuccessful, then perhaps a trap for those whom he's given his stolen goods to would help. Then you could find the right individuals to question as to the thief's identity.
What would you propose?
Callias asks.
Melt down some coins. Create a new seal to stamp them with, something that varies only slightly from the current seal. When the money is stolen and used to purchase things in the market, you can arrest whoever is found carrying them.
The room goes silent.
That's a lot of work to put into a simple plan, Lady Terzi, the kingdom's treasurer, says. She has a large ledger held out in front of her. If something should go wrong and we were to lose that money,
Callias turns to stare the woman down. We should put this plan into action. Immediately. It's the best idea to ever come out of this room. Unless anyone else has any other objections.
His teeth clench as he tacks on the question. Until he's 21, he doesn't get the final say, I remember. He has to rely on the council's vote.
When no one speaks, Callias repeats the order before returning back to me. He rubs the back of his neck, turning it until a faint crack sounds.
Now that that's underway, will you be free to join me at the Demetrio Ball?
I ask hopefully.
I'm sorry, dearest. I rule 6 different kingdoms. There's always more to be discussed. I haven't the time for parties or balls or plays. I barely have time to eat and sleep.
I dare to take a step closer, and lavender and mint washes over me. Just remember, Callias, if we're to be convincing, we need to have the appearance of a courting couple. Courting couples do things. They attend festivities together.
He looks at me a moment longer. I will send you more gifts.
What? Is that supposed to appease me? Or make the facade more convincing?
Epaphras! Callias yells.
I jump as the appointment keeper scurries over.
Kindly see Lady Stathos out of the meeting room.
I'm escorted away without another word.
Chapter 11.
I can't decide if that went well or not. On the one hand, I think I just impressed the council. On the other, I'm no closer to getting Callias to spend more time with me. Perhaps at least my little bit of wisdom will get me invited to future meetings? That's probably far too much to hope for. Still, I'll need to wait and see how it plays out, and I have other problems to deal with. After searching everywhere for Reuben, a servant finally directs me to one of the billiards rooms in the palace. Ladies don't usually enter gaming rooms, but I'm not about to let that stop me. He's, of course, accompanied by Leandros and Petros.
Alessandra! Leandros exclaims. You've sought me out twice in one day. You really are a terrible tease.
I haven't sought you out at all. I'll remind you I was looking for the king earlier, and now I'm actually here to see Reuben.
He's taken, my lady. You really do like to set your sights on the unattainable, don't you?
Not at all, though that does seem to be your strategy.
Petros laughs as he applies chalk to his billiard stick. She's got you there. Why do you need to see me? Reuben asks as he leans over the table, sizing up the cue ball and its intended trajectory.
I have an unwanted suitor I want to get rid of.
Ouch, Petros says on Leandros's behalf.
I roll my eyes.
I'm of course speaking of Myron Caligaris. I thought it was Eliades who was giving you trouble, Leandros states.
Him too. Actually, my plan should rid me of both of them.
Reuben hits the cue ball, and a series of clacks results as other colored balls bounce off one another. I'm the wrong person to come to, he says as he stands. If I knew how to get rid of unwanted attention, I wouldn't be engaged to Melita. But my father has threatened me with disinheritance if I don't comply with his wishes.
Just tell the king about these fops, Petros says to me. A threat from the most powerful man in the world is sure to get them to back off. I absolutely cannot do that. If Callias confronts Myron, then Myron will run his mouth. I hope to do this without involving Callias, I say. I don't need him fighting my battles for me.
Want me to challenge him to a duel? Leandros asks, as he bends over the billiards table for his turn. This Myron fellow can't seek your favor if he has a sword stuck in his gut.
I don't need you fighting my battles either, I say.
Then you challenge him to a duel, Leandros says, a smile in his eyes. He rises from his move, and the play goes to Petros.
I battle with my mind, not weapons, which is why I'm here. I need Reuben to help me put a plan into action.
I think we just discussed how abysmal I am at getting rid of unwanted attention, Reuben says. The only thing that works with Melita is hiding, like I'm doing now.
What if I told you I have a plan to free you from Melita? Reuben straightens so quickly, I hear his back crack.
Are you serious?
Very.
What do you need? Name it, and it's yours.
He can barely get the words out fast enough. Leandros and Petros pause the game to listen. First, I need you to answer a few questions, if you would.
Of course.
What does Melita want more than anything else?
To marry a rich and handsome man with a higher title than her father, a baron.
That's why she snagged you at the first opportunity, I realize, and why she bats her eyelashes at Orin. He has a better title than you. And he's far more handsome, Petros puts in unhelpfully. Reuben reaches over and smacks him. Why would your father allow you to marry beneath you?
I ask, curious.
He's friends with the Baron. They've talked of uniting their families since before I was born.
The words come out as a grumble. Well, we're prepared to stop that. All we need is to arrange for Orin and Melita to get together, I say.
How are you going to manage that?
Leandros asks.
Eliades is smitten with you, and I hardly see how that is going to rid you of Myron, was it?
Yes, for that bit, I'm going to need some money. Reuben leans his billiard stick against the nearest wall.
You can really get rid of Melita without getting me disinherited?
I nod.
How much money do you need?
Without blinking, I say, 5,000 nekos.
Petros whistles. That's more than my father makes in a year.
But not Reuben's father? I ask.
Reuben doesn't need to think twice about it. I'll get you the money. Just tell me what else you'll need.
Invite your father to the palace. I don't care how. Just get him here. And in the meantime, you need to play the perfect fiancé so no one will suspect anything. Petros turns to his friend.
In that case, he's doomed.
The next afternoon, Callias sends me a bracelet strung with black pearls and black diamonds, a truly impressive design considering Naxos is nowhere near the sea. On Wednesday, I receive an ivory comb studded with blue diamonds, meant to be worn in an elaborate updo. Friday, I'm brought emeralds cut into the shapes of leaves, strung around a necklace band that ends in a large topaz. Each gift is presented to me when I'm surrounded by people, knowing that these presents are for their benefit, not mine, has a sharp bitterness taking root in me every time another one is delivered in a gloved servant's hand. The king is supposed to be in love with me. He's supposed to give me gifts because he's smitten with me. Not because he's making poor attempts to convince others of our ruse. He's making this impossible. A servant finds me the day of the Demetrio ball, a letter in hand. I break the bright red wax seal and read.
My dearest Alessandra, I hope you will forgive my boldness, but word has reached me that the king did not accompany you to your latest outing at the estate of the Christakoses. In fact, it's rumored you spent the evening with a childhood friend. This has dared me to hope that perhaps you've ended things with his majesty. You, of course, know of my business travels.
I skip to the bottom to find the signature. It's from Orin. I didn't even notice he was gone from the palace.
They've kept me from your side for far too long, but I think of you daily. I miss your conversation, your smile, the way you look away from me when you're overcome by my generosity. When I look at the night sky, I cease to see its beauty. All I can think of is you, your sable hair, and how I long to run my fingers through its links, your lips, ripe as cherries.
The descriptions of my distinct body parts go on for 5 more paragraphs. I skip to the bottom.
Please write me and tell me you have missed me as much as I have missed you. Your humble servant, Orin Galopas, Earl of Eliades.
Dear gods, the man is completely delusional. I look up from the letter and startled to find the servant who delivered it still waiting just outside the doorway to my rooms.
Begging your pardon, my lady, but my lord hoped you might send a reply back with me.
I want to unleash my fury on Orin's servant. Instead, I clear my head enough to think reasonably.
How long will Lord Eliades be away from the palace? I should expect another week at least, my lady.
Good. I start to shut the door, and the servant coughs. Oh, there will be no reply for the Earl. And I slam the door the rest of the way. This letter is an opportunity, a way to complete the rest of our plans. A short line extends down the driveway, but Myron, Hestia, Rhoda, and I don't wait long before we're greeted by the Duke and Duchess. After introductions are made, the Duke lifts his eyes over my shoulder.
The king is not with you.
Callias so wished to come, I say, daring to use the king's first name in front of the Duke. I need to show intimacy between us, since Callias isn't actually here.
Alas, he's hard at work protecting our kingdom.
I'm here to escort Lady Stathos, Myron says, stepping somewhat in front of me. The Duke's eyes widen as he recognizes Myron from the play. Demetrio glances back at me.
You know this gentleman?
I can tell from the tone of his voice what he means.
You willingly associate with this man?
Myron is ruining me. One outing at a time. He elbows me in the ribs.
Myron is a childhood friend.
The words physically pain me to say them.
He's quite charming.
Oh, the Duke says. Well, do enjoy the ball.
I can tell Myron wishes to stay and talk with the Duke longer, but this time it is Rhoda who ushers us along inside. I momentarily lose my ire once I catch sight of the ballroom. The Duke and Duchess refer to their young daughter as their shooting star, a reference, I'm told, to her prodigious talent at playing the pianoforte. The decorations have been done to match the endearment. Candles are placed within holders with holes cut in the shape of stars, the designs magnifying and showing on the ceiling and walls. Bundles of flowers in yellows and blues cover every surface in the grand estate, the flowers trailing in the shape of the fading light that appears behind a shooting star. And the young lady's gown rivals my own with diamonds sewn into it every few inches. A long train follows her for 10 feet everywhere she goes, making it hard to miss her in the crowd since the partygoers have to mind the chiffon sweeping the floor. As soon as Hestia, Rhoda, and I take in the sights, my two friends are quickly whisked away by men to the dance floor.
He's quite charming,
Myron repeats when we are alone.
You were supposed to extol my virtues to the Duke.
Showing up with me to the ball is telling enough, Myron. You don't want to overdo it. You're going to ruin yourself by overselling yourself. True men of character don't have to try this hard.
Careful, Alessandra. If you don't sell me enough, I might just have to start extolling your virtues to the court. Or rather, your lack of them.
He laughs at his own joke. Once he composes himself, he pulls me into the dance number among other couples on the floor.
Think what you will of me and my methods, he says after one turn around the ballroom, but my plan is working splendidly. I've already secured some invitations of my own. I shouldn't need you to get me into any other events.
In that case, you don't need me anymore.
Don't be ridiculous. My connection to you is what is giving me the needed credibility. We will continue to associate regularly.
Credibility?
Yes. I'm looking for men to invest in my new business venture. Ow!
I accidentally step on Myron's foot, so caught off guard by the words.
You're using me to get nobles to invest in a business venture?
Myron takes me through the next set of turns in the dance, acting as though we're not having any sort of argument.
Of course. If you will recall, I'm in quite a lot of debt. I need to get out of it. I'm looking to buy some sailing vessels to open up a trading line with the Kingdom of Estetia.
I'm speechless for a moment.
You.
You, the man who spends all his money on cards and dice, are convincing courtiers to give you their money so you can open up trade with the kingdom our Shadow King is planning to invade?
Myron glares down at me.
I'm good at getting others to give me money. I've raised quite a lot already. Besides, it's not like Estetia knows the king is planning to conquer them.
My hair should catch fire. Such heat emanates from my body.
You are going to sully my good name when you steal all this money to pay off your debts.
No, I'm not using it to pay off my debts. I'm going to buy trading ships. With the profits of my new business, I will then begin to pay off my debts.
Our second dance together ends, and the orchestra strikes up a third song, but I walk away from Myron.
Alessandra, I didn't say you could cease dancing with me.
No,
we can't be seen dancing 3 songs in a row.
He grins. I own you. You will do whatever I say.
If we dance another dance, then you might as well tell the whole world my secret, because rumors about me will abound, and the king will end our courtship. 3 dances in a row is all but an announcement of an engagement. Then you will have nothing to gain from me. The words are desperate, but Myron must see reason. He sighs. Oh, very well. I shall go find another partner. But don't you dare go disappear from the party. And blessedly, he leaves me. I take the rest of the song to compose myself. I am courting the king. I will be rid of Myron very soon. Everything will go according to plan. No one makes a fool of me. After a few more steadying breaths, I determine to salvage what I can of the evening and enjoy the party. I stand by the wall, thinking to catch the eye of some man to encourage him to ask me to dance. I find one, a tall stranger with hair a deep red shade, his complexion sun-kissed, and his muscled body practically straining through the well-fitted formal attire. He gives me a polite nod and walks on. Though somewhat irritated by the rejection, I remain undaunted and try to catch another's gaze. I find a broad-shouldered blonde with a handsome mustache and give him a coy smile. He returns the greeting enthusiastically and turns away from me. What the hell? No man here will ask you to dance, a feminine voice says from behind me. I turn and find the owner, Lady Zervis, her gray-streaked hair falling over her shoulders in perfect ringlets. She hides her mouth behind a cream-colored fan, and her eyes reveal nothing of her expression. You are being courted by the king, she says by way of explanation. No one else would dare to approach you save your friend. Orin also dared, but I suppose he doesn't have a sense of self-preservation. He's too busy saving kittens from drowning. If you will permit me to give you some advice, Lady Zervis says, but she doesn't ask it like a question. She plows straight ahead. Deny the king your favors. You will only be unhappy if you resume this courtship. At best, he will hold you at arm's length always, afraid to touch you. And at worst, I ask, that depends on what you fear more. Either he will die and leave you behind in this world, or he will wed another, and you'll be forced to watch him happy with someone else. Such bleak options. I experienced all 3 for a time. And which was worse, watching him with another woman, or knowing he was dead? She snaps her fan closed, a hard line set to her mouth. The former, dear. Definitely the former. She turns for me, picking up her skirts in one hand and stalking away. What a horrible woman. My eyes catch on a spot of color in the room. Reuben is dancing with his fiancée, his lips barely concealing a grimace as she prattles on about something. When they turn, she sees me and pulls Reuben closer, tossing her hair over her shoulder. I need to speak with Reuben anyway, and insulting Melita is just a happy bonus. She's been allowed to go far too long unchecked. I approach the couple, waiting until they reach the outskirts of the dance floor before tapping on Reuben's shoulder. He stops, and his eyes light up with relief when he sees me. May I cut in? I ask. You'll be married to the man soon, Lady Xenicus. It's not sporting of you to keep him to yourself before then. And surely you would not deny the future queen. Before she can utter a word, Reuben extricates himself from Melita's clutches and twirls me into the dance. You're a goddess, he says into my ear. You saved me. Consider it a mutual saving. No one will dance with me. They all fear the king's ire. I don't. And right now, I'm too bored to care about Melita's ire. Or my father's. We should sneak away. I give him a mischievous grin. And do what exactly? I should say something naughty. But I honestly don't care as long as it gets me away from that woman. By the way, I have the money you requested in my rooms at the palace. I can get it to you as soon as we return. That's wonderful. And I have something that should help us. Eliade sent me a love letter. We can now imitate his handwriting.
All I need is to get my hands on a seal to authenticate the letter we send Melita. I'm told Orin will be back in the palace in just over a week. He no doubt has his seal with him, so we will have to wait until his return to steal it. Have you heard from your father?
Not yet. He has a habit of putting off reading my letters, but he'll come once he reads it. I told him I withdrew 5,000 nekos from my account. That will have him here in no time.
And what do you intend to tell him when he arrives in a fury? I rest my head on Reuben's shoulder as soon as I spot Melita glaring at the two of us.
That I'm purchasing something spectacular for Melita, of course. But I needed something jarring to prompt his journey to the palace. Once he arrives, I think I can keep him here until Orin is back from business.
Good. We need to be careful. Timing is everything.
Another couple sidles up next to us. It's Petros, dancing with a new man I don't recognize.
Are you hogging the king's bow?
I'm merely trying to escape mine, Reuben says.
You've had Alessandra for two dances already.
If it's a third, people will talk.
Here, let's switch.
Suddenly, I'm pulled into Petros's arms, and Reuben finds himself holding Petros's partner.
Hi, Reuben says awkwardly.
Would you rather dance with a man or dance